Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to the Goddard Report. Comments made on the Goddard Report and TalkDigitalNetwork.com are an expression of opinion only. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Dr. Martin Paul. He's an EMF expert and professor emeritus from Washington State University. Martin, we last spoke in 2019. Welcome back to the Goddard Report.
Glad to be with you.
Now, what is an EMF? And then we'll talk about differences. What is an EMF?
Well, it stands for electromagnetic field. And it really came from understanding how things like light and other kinds of things travel through space. And they basically, you know, the question was, how can we, for instance, see stars and, in fact, whole galaxies, gigantic distances away? How does that light get to us? And so that was, you know, it was basically came out of an understanding of how that process occurs, how these things propagate through empty space. And the answer is it works through Maxwell's equations, which I won't try to really explain. But and so that was part of it. That's kind of the history of it. But the other part of the history, which is particularly important with regard to understanding how these things affect us, how these EMFs affect our bodies, is that back in 1831, Michael Faraday, the great British physicist, discovered that electric currents generate an electromagnetic field in the space around them. And that those fields are coherent, that is, they act as a single object that produces strong electric forces and magnetic forces on our bodies. And that's the way we get biological effects, is through those forces. And but, you know, we're in a situation, and those same forces, by the way, are used for wireless communications. So anytime you have wireless communication, you have one antenna putting out a coherent field. It's picked up by another antenna because the electric force is on it. And, okay, so how does that, in fact, differs from most natural EMFs.
Sure. So what's the difference between natural EMFs and electronically generated EMFs, and do they get along?
Well, they don't have to get along. We have to get along with them. The most natural EMFs, not all, but most natural EMFs are incoherent. They're made up of gigantic numbers of individual photons going off in different directions with different polarities and phases and frequencies. And, you know, whereas the coherent ones that we just talked about before are put out with a particular frequency, a particular vector direction, a particular polarity and phase. Now, I know that sounds like gobbledygook, but what it means is they behave as a single object and they produce these strong forces. And that's the critical question. This critical thing in terms of understanding the way biological effects are produced. So what's the next question?
Are electronically generated EMFs actually microwaves?
Well, it depends on the frequencies. You know, you can put out electronically any frequency you want, basically. But there is a range of frequencies that are defined as the microwave's range of frequencies, and those, when they fall into that frequency range, then sure, yes, they are. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So radio waves come in very long lengths, like the kind they use to communicate with submarines under the ocean. That's a very long wave. And the mm-hmm. stuff you cook your food with, that's a microwave. And it started when they developed radar, and somebody noticed a chocolate bar was melting near the radar set. Is that how the microwave oven started?
Well, actually, one of my... I've got another story. It came from one of my fraternity brothers, and his father was working on this stuff during World War II, and apparently they just started cooking their food with this stuff, so it wasn't really accidental. But that was the story that he told me, I mean, they knew they produced heat, and the microwave ovens use a particular frequency, which is particularly strongly absorbed by water. And because all the foods we're interested in have water in them, that means that, you know, they get heated up sort of very efficiently, and that's the whole point of the way microwave ovens work.
Are there different levels of concern for 3G, 4G, LTE, 5G, Wi-Fi with 2.4G, 5G, and 6GE?
The answer, well, simple answer is yes, mm-hmm. But then the question is why? And the critical factor here is that the pulsations. So all wireless communication, with the exception of 2G radio and 2G cell phones and FM radio, all the others use what's called amplitude modulation. You get your signal goes in some cases extremely high, and then it may drop down close to zero, and then it may go up, and so it's the up and downs of those modulations which carries the information for all other wireless communication. And when people have tested, these studies have been reviewed in I think five or six different review articles published. What it shows is that different EMFs, one that's highly pulsed and another one that's non-pulsed, is what they call continuous wave, they may have the same average intensity, but the pulsed ones, the highly pulsed ones, have much more biological effects. So I think what that's telling us is it's these peak exposures, these peak pulses, however short they are, they produce most of the effects. And that's the problem we have is that the safety guidelines that have been put forth by the industry and by the regulatory agencies, all of them only protect us from thermal effects, from heating. They don't affect us at all from these electric forces and magnetic forces, which is how they affect our bodies. So all of these safety guidelines are bogus, and all of the claims of safety based on them are bogus, and that's the world we live in.
So a pulsed one, it's sort of like soldiers marching across a bridge. If they all march at the same beat, they can bring the bridge down because they transmit more energy all at one time, whereas if they all walk individually, they're producing the same amount of energy, but it's not all mm-hmm. at the same time. Is that kind of what it's like?
Yeah, that's a good analogy. I like that one.
Are 5G mobile phones more dangerous due to being a receiver for 5G?
I think, let me just say the following. First of all, 5G is a slogan. It's not really terribly well defined. But what all the 5G systems do, or at least they're supposed to do, is carry huge amounts of information per second, right? That's their whole rationale for 5G is you're going to have something that carries gigantic amounts of information very quickly. And that means that it's going to be extraordinarily highly pulsed. And it also may mean that the peak pulsations may be much, much stronger. And so that's the main concern, I think, is that when you use, and so 5G uses higher frequencies. And the reason they use higher frequencies is because the higher frequencies can carry more pulses. And so that's the whole basis of these things. Now, there have been some published case studies which I think have clearly shown that 5G is really quite dangerous, especially for people who are close to these antennae. And so we do have reason for, I believe, great concern as a consequence of that. So, I don't know. Does that answer your question, I guess?
Proponents of 5G say it provides faster download speeds. What else does it do?
Well, it heavily impacts our bodies. That's the point, yeah. The other thing about using things like millimeter waves is they don't penetrate through walls and stuff very well. So you have to use much higher intensities as a consequence of that. And that's problematic as well, because, you know, you're walking around outside or you're close to one of these things putting out extremely high intensities, even if it is coming through a wall, you're going to get a lot of exposures. And these are things that, based on these case studies, these are having really quite strong impacts on people's health.
What do the different megahertz of cell towers represent, and are they dangerous? There's 600, 700, 850, 1900, 2100, 2600, and 3500.
Yeah, well, I think, as I said before, it's not just frequencies that you have to worry about, it's the amount of pulsation. But generally, the higher the frequency, the more they can pulse. And so we've tended to go towards higher frequencies as a consequence of that. And of course, you know, people talk about smarter and smarter devices. And the problem with smarter devices is they have to pulse much more in order to carry huge amounts of information. So we're on a treadmill towards disaster, really, because the ever-increasing smart devices, the ever-increasing intensities of these pulses, et cetera, is inevitably going to have greater and greater effects.
What would be a safe distance to live away from the different megahertz cell towers?
Let me say a couple of things about that. One is that the cell towers are all designed to irradiate primarily horizontally. Okay, so if you are at a level where you are pretty much at the same level as the antenna, you're going to get much, much more exposures than you will if you're either way above it or way below it. Okay, so that makes things complicated. But the other thing that makes things complicated is the absorption of these things by various things, including walls and so forth. And so I think, so it makes it somewhat challenging to answer your question in a simple way. Having said that, the most recent published study, which I think came out about 7 years ago now, on how far the biological effects go from cell phone towers. So here we're talking about probably mostly 3G and 4G, certainly not 5G. was you had to be at least 400 meters away to have even, you know, to reduce the effects down to at least a tolerably low level, which means that most people, in fact, are living much closer to these things than they should be, and working and so forth. So, yeah.
One thing I wonder about, am I living in an open-air microwave oven when I'm walking along the street and a car with a radar-assisted braking system goes by? Those people in the car are in a Faraday cage, relatively mm-hmm. protected, but I'm out in the open, and if I'm at an intersection, there's dozens right. of cars pulsing radar now.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. And that's a great concern, and none of these things are being dealt with. None of them. Not a single one of these things is being dealt with. And that's the problem. The problem is, you know, we have, as I said before, we have safety guidelines that are completely nonsensical. They're just, you know, they do not work. And we know they don't work. And we still allow, you know, all these things to come out and impact us, and so you're right. Radar is a big problem. There are other things from cars that are a problem too. For example, you know, a lot of the electric cars apparently irradiate at high levels, and I don't have good data on which ones are better and which ones are worse, but I know that there are concerns about them, and that's not surprising because they have extremely high magnetic fields, which are involved in the electric motors that are running them, and so you know, those are things that can produce effects. So there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, it just we have you know, we've got Wi-Fi all over the place. We've got people using cell phones all over the place. We've got cell phone towers all over the place. We've got smart meters all over the place, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, these are all things that each of them is of concern. And I wish I could sort of give you a list and say, hey, this is the worst one, and then this is the next worst. But it really depends a lot on what your situation is as to which of these is going to most impact you. And so, anyway, that's...
What kind of health issues have been linked to EMFs for humans, dogs, cats, birds, other animals?
Okay, so it was shown over 50 years ago, 55 years ago, that in animal studies, the three most impacted tissues, that is, in terms of the structure of the tissues in the body, were, first of all, the nervous system, including the brain, number one. Second, the heart. Third, the testis. But all organs are impacted. If you look at the literature, I don't think you can find any organs that are not impacted. So, you know, so what are we seeing in terms of effects? We see many different things. We see oxidative stress, which is involved in almost all chronic disease, and inflammation, which is also involved in almost all chronic disease. You see attacks on the DNA of our cells. You see a lot of effects associated with the brain, and those include the widespread neuropsychiatric effects. They include neurodegeneration, and you get massive neurodegeneration in animals from in experimental studies. We have good reason to think that humans are not quite as sensitive as those animals, but nevertheless, we are sensitive, and we do develop things, including Alzheimer's disease. That's another thing. We have a lot of studies that have been done on EEGs, which clearly show experimentally that the human brain, in fact, is impacted by a wide diversity of EMFs. because it influences the electrical activity in the brain as measured by EEGs. So there are 38 published studies on EEG effects. And those have effects, of course, you know, they produce other biological effects, but I think the most important thing about the EEG studies is they clearly show experimentally that these EMFs, a wide range of them, do impact the human brain. And so there should be no question about that. What else is going on? I think there are quite a number of other things which I think are highly problematic, including autism, where there is evidence that EMFs have roles, but also that chemicals have roles. And that may be true with many of the things that I mentioned, that the EMFs act primarily via increased intracellular calcium, but many chemicals can also act primarily by excessive intracellular calcium. So there can be similar effects from EMFs and from chemicals. And that makes it, you know, harder to determine what the relative roles are, but they both can have important roles. Okay, so what else is happening? You get effects on the heart that involve the electrical control of the heart. And the reason you get those are because these VGCCs, these voltage-gated calcium channels, which are the main targets of the EMFs, are very active in the pacemaker cells, in the part of the heart called the sinoatrial node. And they then produce changes in the electrical control of the heart. And they include tachycardia, very rapid heartbeat. They include arrhythmias. They include bradycardia, and these particularly occur with long exposures or very high-intensity exposures. You get slowed heartbeat. And they include sudden cardiac death. If that's not unpleasant enough, then we can talk about something else. Those things are going on. You get reproductive effects in humans and in animals, and they've been studied in both. Male reproduction's been much more studied than female reproduction because it's much easier to study. But there are effects in female reproduction. And in male reproduction, you get decreased sperm counts due to changes in the structure of the testis. But you also get changes that occur as a consequence of the direct impacts of EMFs on the sperm. So, for instance, there have been a whole series of studies where people have taken human semen samples, divide them in half, expose half of them to Wi-Fi or cell phone radiation or any of a number of other types of radiation, and leave the other half unexposed, and they see very large differences between the two. So you get decreases in motility, you get increases in structurally abnormal sperm, and let me just say, it's gotten to the point in human populations where there are populations where only 2-4% of the sperm are morphologically normal. Now, that doesn't mean the abnormal ones are completely ineffective, they're completely sterile. That's not true. They still have some activity. But you can see, we're just seeing absolutely massive effects on human sperm in human populations. We've also seen that the sperm counts have dropped in half or even lower than in half in many, many countries around the world. So other things that you see from experimental studies on human sperm is that you see increases in apoptosis, that is programmed cell death, so a lot of the sperm die. You have also increases in attacks on the DNA in the sperm. So the DNA becomes broken, basically. And all these things, of course, have impacts on human reproduction. And so we're seeing things where, you know, where reproduction is dropping, and we have to go to things like in vitro fertilization in order to get reproduction, and it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And rather than paying attention to what's the probable cause of all this, we just try to do a technological fix, which basically doesn't work very well. So, yeah, so those are some of the things that you see. You also see almost every single hormone system in the body is impacted. You get attacks on the DNA of the cells. I think I already mentioned that. And those, in turn, can cause cancer. And EMFs do cause cancer. And, yes, the industry tells you they can't, but they're not truthful about this. And, in fact, you know, there are a lot of studies. There's something, I put together something like 45 different reviews, each of which argues that EMFs cause cancer. The fact that you attack the DNA of the cells, that's one of the classic mechanisms by which cancer can be caused. So when you have this attack on the DNA, and then you see cancer, then it's not, there shouldn't be any surprise. And let me just say something about cell phones, okay? The industry claims nothing is known about what cell phones do, but we have situations where multiple things have been reported that occur preferentially on what's called the ipsilateral side of the side of the head that people use their cell phones, as opposed to the opposite side, which is called the contralateral side. So when you see this, you know, the only reasonable explanation is, yeah, the cell phones are causing it. So what do you see? Well, you see cancer preferentially on one side, not the versus the other. You see tinnitus caused preferentially on one side versus the other. You see DNA effects on the cells in the skin, preferentially on one side versus the other. You see a number of others, and I'm spacing out on them now. There are a number of others that have also been, there's effects on the blood circulation in the brain, preferentially on one side versus the other. So all these things, there's very strong evidence for cell phone causation, and yet the industry claims, no, nothing's happening. And let me just say, there is one argument the industry makes. It's actually kind of an interesting one. They claim that a number of these things started too early to be caused by cell phones. And there is some truth to that. And what does that tell you? What it tells you is the cordless phones do very much the same thing, because the cordless phones came in earlier than the cell phones. So the industry has very clever arguments, and you have to give them credit for it, but when you look at them carefully, they all fall apart.
We'll have more with Dr. Martin Paul right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Dr. Martin Paul. Martin, is 5G mainly being targeted to turn big cities into 15-minute cities and run autonomous vehicles?
I don't know about the autonomous vehicles, but I mean, as you were saying before, the radar is probably a more important technology for that than 5G. But I think, you know, it seems to me, and I have to say, I'm not a totally unbiased source here, that the only sort of rational use of 5G is for AI, for artificial intelligence, because for a lot of artificial intelligence methods, you've got to transfer very large amounts of information from sensors out in the periphery to a central computer and then back so that the artificial intelligence can actually do something. You have to have transmission in both directions very rapid. Now, that could be done wired, but that's not what we're doing. And let me just say, wired communication is always safer, is always faster, it's always more secure than wireless. And yet, you know, because the industry makes more money from wireless, that's what we're doing. And so, you know, what I'm saying is that, and so as a consequence of, if I'm right about this issue with AI, that's really the only sensible use of 5G, what are we doing? We're destroying human intelligence. At the same time, we're trying to buttress artificial intelligence. Is that the kind of world you want to live in?
Streetlights on roads and highways have recently been replaced with new ones rumored to involve 5G. What are you hearing?
I don't know about that. I can't tell you. I'm interested in the issue, but I don't know. I don't know enough about it. Yeah.
There's rumors the mRNA injections have circuitry in them that allows 5G to communicate with the circuitry in the human body. What are you hearing?
I guess I'm kind of skeptical about that. You know, there are problems with some vaccines, but I don't know that that's a problem we should be worrying about. But maybe you should talk to somebody who has the opposite view and see what they have to say.
We're hearing 5G cannot penetrate concrete and steel. What about trees, hedges, wood, and windows?
Okay, so first of all, you have to understand where that comes from. And it is the case that the electrical fields of these millimeter waves, these very high frequency waves, are very rapidly absorbed in many different materials. But that doesn't mean you cannot get penetrating effects. You do, in fact, get penetrating effects, and I've published on them. And those are produced not by the electric fields, but by the magnetic fields. So the magnetic fields are much more highly penetrating than are the electric fields. And that's a very important issue, because what it means is that even though, you know, the electric field of 5G is absorbed, that the highly penetrating magnetic fields can still produce biological effects coming through walls and other things, and deeply, and those can produce things deeply in the body. So do produce effects deeply in the body. And so, you know, like a lot of things, there is some truth to that, but the falsehood is probably more important than the truth.
Some areas have a high density clusters of cell antennas, while other areas don't have that many. Are high density cell areas likely a health hazard to humans and all kinds of critters?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If people live near a cell tower or smaller antenna, what could they do to stop cellular and 5G signals from entering their home and yard?
Okay. Well, they're really two different kinds of issues. One is, what can you do in your house? And then the second one, what do you do if you're outside? And so let's talk about what you can do in your house. There are shielding materials that you can purchase. For instance, you can get shielding paint. They come in two different types, and this technology may change over time too, so that what I tell you today may not be true in the future, but. You know, the two main types that we have now are graphite paint, which is a black paint, where you have all kinds of tiny little graphite fibers that basically bounce the EMFs off of them, and they disrupt the coherence of the EMFs. But it's also true apparently is they don't disrupt all the effects. So the other things that you can do if you're using this kind of shielding paint is to ground it so that the impacts on it go to the ground instead of going through into your body. So now if you have a black paint, you don't have to look at black walls and black ceilings. You can cover it up with a different color paint, but you should first ground it before you cover it up. So those are things can be done. When you have windows, they're a little more tricky, not surprising. But you can get cloth materials that are shielding cloths, and you can make curtains out of them. You can also get a plastic that can be put on the windows that absorbs a lot of the EMFs. And so there are things you can do with windows as well. But, you know, the more of these things you've got, the more, you know, obviously the more tricky these things get, right? Now, the other kind of shielded paint that you can buy is a paint that's got all kinds of little tiny metal little flecks in there. And they also act to basically disrupt the coherence of the EMFs, but they supposedly work better if you ground them as well. I hope I haven't completely lost your audience when I say those.
Would that
things.
Be like the candy apple paint you used to get for your hot rod?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Not many hot rods around anyway now. Could homes further away from cellular towers become more in demand and worth more?
I think they already are. And also away from high-voltage power lines. You know, these are things that influence people as to whether they want to buy a home in a particular location or not. So they do influence people, and they should.
Here in the lower mainland of British Columbia, one of the suburbs, Tawasin had a number of homes under high-tension wires, and people complained of poor health, and eventually they were bought out of their homes by the hydro company.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to see more things like that?
Well, we probably should, but will we? Let me just say something about high-voltage power lines, because there's some complexities there that are important to understand, okay? So high voltage power line basically our power in Canada and the US is all supposed to be 60 hertz, right? It's a 60 cycle frequency, right? And it's supposed to look like a very nice smooth sine wave going up and down and up and down 60 times a second, right? If you actually look at them, and you can do this with a device called an oscilloscope, they don't look anything like that. And they have what's called a lot of dirty electricity in those power lines. And that's true for, whether you're talking about 120 volts or 240 volts, or you're talking about, 60,000 or 200,000 volts, whatever, on a high voltage power line. It's true with any of them. They all have a lot of dirty electricity. And those then produce these kind of pulses. They're not quite the same kind of pulses I talked about before. They're a different kind of pulses, but they have the same kind of effects. They produce major biological effects as a consequence of this dirty electricity. The problem we have is that right now the power companies don't really have control over the dirty electricity. And so you really can't blame them for it because they can't control it. And so what are the main sources of the dirty electricity? A lot of the stuff, I think, comes from things that are being done with the best of intentions with regard to solar power and wind power. That is, when we get power from either solar or wind, you get a DC current. So it's a constant DC current. And then you have to convert it to AC before we can use it in our power system. The problem is that we are using what are called digital inverters to do that. And they are inevitably dirty as a consequence. So they generate gigantic amounts of dirty electricity in our power lines because we're not doing it right. And so, as I say, we're doing these things with the best of intentions to lower climate change and, you know, carbon dioxide release and so forth, but we're not paying attention to all the science, and the science is actually very concerning here, I think. So there are some technological fixes to this, but we're not using them, basically, or at least we're not using enough of them. And so, we're getting ourselves into very deep trouble. And I have to say, when I moved to Portland here, I had a lot of dirty electricity in my house coming in from outside. I hired somebody to work on it, and it was decreased by a factor of, I think, something like 20. And since then, it's gone up by a factor of about 2 to 3. So even though it was fixed before, where I'm getting other stuff coming in from outside that's worse over that time period. So that was about a 13-year time period. So we're really, if you're if you've got neighbors who have photovoltaics on their roofs, and if they're on the same circuit that you're on, then you're going to get particularly high amounts of dirty electricity coming into your house from those neighbors. As I say, they're doing this with the best of intentions. One of the problems we have is that the companies who put in these photovoltaics often will void your warranty if you go ahead and do what you should be doing, and that is putting in filters to kind of decrease the amount of dirty electricity produced. And let me say, those filters are good for you, they're good for your neighbors, they're good for the environment, but they'll take away your warranty. I think they ought to be sued for a few $100 billion in, say, Canadian dollars, to stop them from doing that, because there's no reason to do it.
We keep hearing about smart meters burning down homes. How dangerous are smart meters?
Well, the burning down homes, as I understand it, were due to defects in the smart meters. That they weren't an essential part of the smart meters, but smart meters are dangerous because they have, lots of pulsations. And let me just say, you don't need, if your electricity is measured, once a month, you don't need pulses every few seconds on your smart meter. But that's what we often have. Even if you have a variable rates where rates change 2 or 3 times a day, you only have to pulse out 2 or 3 times a day. You don't have to do it as huge numbers of pulses, but they put out huge number of pulses. I think what most people think is basically that the electric companies are spying on you, and they're probably right. I can't tell you that that's, as a scientist, that I know for certain it's right, but my guess is it probably is. So we live in a bizarre world, and it gets more bizarre all the time.
Does GM Super Cruise work off cellular signals or microwaves?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. Super Cruise, what is it?
I don't know. I don't have a GM. I have a really old Acura.
Okay. I don't know. I have to say, one of the things I tell people is that anybody who claims to know everything is lying through their teeth. So if I don't know something, I'll tell you.
What are 6G and 7G likely to bring?
God only knows. I mean, these things are slogans. They're not well defined, but the point is, the higher we go in frequency, the higher we go in pulsation, the worse things are going to be. And how fast they're going to destroy us, I don't really know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's quite rapid.
Is sending harmful megahertz waves into your property legal, and should it be challenged in court?
I think there are debates about whether it's legal. And I don't know what the situation is in Canada, but I guess that Canada has Safety Code 6, which is just as bogus as what's used in the U.S. and in Europe and other places. It simply doesn't work. But I don't know the details about what the legalities are on Safety Code 6. What I would say whether this applies in Canada or not, I don't know. But in the U.S., it's been argued that the protections against assault can be used to sue these companies. As they're assaulting your body, and those are state laws, not federal laws, and so they all have these things that my understanding, and I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know that, you know, maybe things are much more complicated than I think they may be, but my understanding is still possible to sue under protections from assault, and there's no question that our bodies are being assaulted.
A friend of the show is a technician who installs and maintains cellular towers and antennas. We asked him if he had any questions for this interview, and his response was, what's his favorite brand of tin foil? Your thoughts on that? Obviously, he doesn't believe much of this.
I think that the kind of arrogance that goes into a statement like that is just absolutely stunning. What it says is, here's you got somebody who is so certain of the facts, even though every single fact he's gotten has been industry propaganda crap that's been shown to be false over and over and over again, that someone would make a statement like that shows just a stunning arrogance and stunning lack of appreciation for the health and safety of everybody in Canada and the U.S. and various other parts of the world.
Martin, how would you sum up the kind of electronic soup that we live in, and how dangerous is it, and what can we do to fight it?
Well, it's not just the electronic soup. I mean, we got chemical soup too, and they do similar things, as I said. It's a gigantic thing, and it's just a complete and total failure of our regulatory systems that we haven't dealt with them. And these things have been developing over, you know, the last 70, 80 years. And yet, it's not like we haven't had time to deal with them, but we're the whole thing is getting worse, not better. And I guess my opinion is that the only way to deal with this is to go through the legal system and sue them for huge amounts of money. The problem is that the lawyers don't understand this stuff, and so they don't know how to deal with it. And so we need good lawyers who know something about these things, and I don't know that we have them. So that's a big problem.
Martin, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Okay. I hope I haven't scared everybody out of their wits, but anyway. Yeah, good to be with you.
My guest has been Dr. Martin Paul. He's an EMF expert and professor emeritus from Washington State University. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on the Goddard Report and TalkDigitalNetwork.com are an expression of opinion only. The Goddard Report is available online and mobile at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. The Goddard Report is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.